Welcome to I Guess We're Grownups Now, the podcast about being the kind of adults we want to be. I'm your host, Carrie Halstead, and welcome to season two. It's been a busy summer and I've been doing lots of stuff, but not podcasting. I've got lots of new episodes planned and hoped for. So if you're looking for past I Guess We're Grownups episodes, they're at goodstuff.fm/grownups. Or search for it on iTunes, where you can subscribe to hear each new episode as it comes out, and you can rate and review if you like the show. You can also find me on Twitter at grownups_FM. I Guess We're Grownups Now is brought to you by FeedPress. FeedPress is analytics and podcast hosting made for bloggers and podcasters. FeedPress is a simple, intuitive, and powerful RSS analytics and podcast hosting platform featuring powerful subscriber and podcast download tracking, integrated newsletters, automated publishing to popular social networks such as Twitter and Facebook, a slick drag-and-drop podcast hosting interface, and everything you need in order to submit an optimized feed to iTunes. With 250 meg of flexible file storage that rolls over monthly, you can easily upload 4 episodes per month. Upgrading storage is easy and affordable, starting at a flat rate of just $20 for a gig. Go to feed.press/grownups today and sign up to try FeedPress for 14 days, no contracts or commitments. Use promo code GRUNUPS during checkout to get 10% off your first year. Today's guest is my friend Hillary Nelson, and she joined me in person in my office to record. She's the other Hillary on Twitter and on the.ca. She's a visual designer and artist, cyclist, and is involved in politics and feminism, and we talk about a little of everything.
Stop reading my bookshelf.
I'm judging you.
I know.
Actually, I've read most of those.
Hillary is here to talk with me about, we're not entirely sure.
How much we hate ourselves.
The adult habit of hating oneself. Good times.
Or hating everybody else too.
Right.
Yes.
So, and knowing the difference and understanding what it means when you find that you are hating yourself. Where should we start?
Okay. Well, we were sort of, I mentioned earlier the quote, you know, what you dislike the most about others is what you do yourself and how true it is and how, like, a lot of the time, you know, you'll be like, oh my God, I can't stand how that person does that. And then your partner or you sort of, you have a flash of insight. You're like, that's because I do it all the time. Like, that's why I hate it. It's because they're me.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm safe in saying this in terms of listenership, but I play on a soccer team, and a few seasons ago there was a woman also playing on it who drove me bonkers. Like, I thought about her all the time.
Oh, you're obsessed.
Outside of soccer. Yeah. I was obsessed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She drove everybody, a lot of people on the bench, nuts, but like, she drove me crazy during the games, and I was thinking about her constantly. And it took me a long time to recognize that a lot of the things I hated about her were things that I do as well, or at least think. I don't maybe verbalize it as often as she does. but then to like realize that I needed to own that to stop thinking about it. Mm-hmm. That, like, yeah.
Yeah, because there's sort of two ways you can deal with it. You can accept it and then like either work on it or not, I guess, depending on what it is. Or you can just start thinking, they do that and I hate that. So that means I'm a horrible person.
Ugh.
And I hate myself.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And everybody must hate me because I'm a horrible person.
Right. Right.
And it's August. It's 30 degrees and I'm hot.
And that is just a cycle that will go down forever.
Yeah.
Partly because it's focused on yourself. Mm-hmm. And once you start just thinking about yourself, you're kind of toast.
Well, yeah. And then you start making, then sometimes you realize like, I hate this thing. And then you start telling people like how bad you are, or like, you know, this thing that's wrong with you, that it is a sort of a way of excusing it instead of like accepting it and working on it. You're just, it's, and which is also not very responsible either.
Exactly. Okay. So, let's talk about some like concrete things instead of like, I feel like we've jumped very deep into this pool very suddenly.
Okay.
So what is an example that you've noticed of things that drive you crazy that other people do?
Well, I'm fairly bossy. Like, I know what I want to do, and I like to, I don't like to have my schedule messed with, and you know, that sort of thing. So if I, once I've kind of decided like what I'm going to do for the day or whatever, and somebody else comes in and interferes with that, then I get mad. Because it's like, no, I've decided this is the best thing to do and we're going to do it. And then like, you can't tell me what to do. your choice is suboptimal. So yeah, I struggle with that. But I'm trying to work on it.
But are you hypersensitive to other people being bossy?
Yeah, like when other people are like sort of exerting their influence, like it's like sometimes I'm gonna get better at it, like working with them. Sometimes I'll just like dig in and, you know, be like, no, I don't want to do that. Or I'll do it, but I'll do it with like really bad grace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really like in the long, because I'm also thinking about like, what's the best way I can use my time? Like what's the best thing to do? Like the most efficient, you know, even like if I'm out doing errands and stuff, it's like, what's the best way, like a order of stores to go to
yeah,
yeah.
Conserve your energy.
Yes, that sort of thing. So yeah, sometimes I have a hard time compromising that sort of stuff. And I also, like as the oldest and like somebody who did well in school and like who reads a lot, and like I know a lot of like trivia and stuff, I have people who ask me for help on a lot of things. And I've started telling people what to do. And then now I've started telling people what to do even when they're not asking for help.
Right.
Yes. And I hate that. Or telling people what their experience is like, which also I hate when it happens to me, like on Twitter, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So. It's easier to recognize when someone else is doing it to you. It's a whole nother grown-up level of ability to recognize when you're doing it to someone else.
Yes. And then I realized like when I thought I was having conversations with people, I was really just sort of talking at them. Mm-hmm. Instead of like maybe thinking, hey, you know, they probably know this already and you don't need to like come in and be Christopher Columbus for them.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's so many stories out there about people who get talked to about something they know without the other person ever.
Oh yeah.
And engaging.
I should totally know better than that.
Right.
Like, right. I have no excuse.
Like rule number one for adult conversation is finding out what the other person knows. Or if you are getting into a topic, I guess like going, so like,
yeah,
what do you think of X before your, mm-hmm. Although that can invite them to explain to you, depending on what like the relationship is, I guess.
Like, just as an aside, it's not really part of it. It's pretty easy to get people to talk about themselves and to keep talking about themselves. And then they like you because you're letting them talk about
right.
themselves.
You're interested in them.
Yeah. So I guess that's a way out of, you know, talking at people is like letting them, like not letting them. That implies you're still in charge, right?
Making yourself shut up. Yeah.
Yeah. Less of a roadblock.
I've found as a, like I grew up, I was a know-it-all and well-read and well-educated too.
Did you watch Jeopardy and like shout out the answers?
Certainly. Yes.
Okay,
like college age. That was me.
Yeah.
I find it very disorienting when I'm sure of something and it turns out I'm wrong. Like it rocks me. Oof, mm-hmm. I hate that. But I find it very hard to not let on when somebody is saying something that I already know.
Like, oh yeah,
there's like this compulsion.
You roll your eyes,
right? Or to go, oh yeah, I know, but that, and like start talking about yourself when really, mm-hmm. like sometimes it's better to just let them keep talking and you don't have to tell anybody.
Yeah. It's, well, actually, Creed is better than you two.
You're going to get me kicked off the network.
So much hate mail. It'd be awesome. I don't like either of those acts,
for the just record. For the record. Oh, man. I think letting other people talk and tell their whole experience rather than jumping on it as soon as you have a commonality is like advanced cooperative conversation.
Yes, because I notice now, like, to me it raises immature when you're having a conversation with someone and then they're basically just telling you about things and then when they're tired of talking about that, then they change the subject to something else, you know, and then they tell you about that.
Yeah, it's also interesting when you go to somebody, if somebody says, oh, so do you like X-Men? And you go, no, I don't really know anything about X-Men. And then they talk for 15 minutes about X-Men.
Yes. Or a repeated acquaintance when they know you don't like something and then they bring it up specifically.
Yes.
But not in a funny way. I mean,
do you take teasing well?
It depends. Like my high school was not, like, I was teased a lot and I didn't really figure out how to handle it till about grade 10. So sometimes if I'm caught like off guard, it's like, you know, I'm 13 again and I'm in grade 7 and there are these girls and like, I don't know what to do. And I like freeze or I go like on the offensive and then I like way overreact.
Yeah.
So, it depends. Like, I still have a fairly short temper. So, and I know that. So I try to like count and then I try to use my sense of humor. Like if I wasn't funny, I probably wouldn't have any friends. And then like, cause you can always diffuse it with humor most of the time.
Right.
Or just ignore them. I guess it depends too. Like I try to remember or figure out sort of the spirit and what it's made.
Yeah.
And most of the times people who are cheesing me, like they do it because they know I will play along like a straight man or that sort of thing. So I try to remember I'm an adult. I'm okay. It's not like an attack.
There's a really good aphorism out there that's says anything you can't laugh at is a weakness.
Yes.
Which I'm not into weaknesses. So I'm trying to like increase the circumference of the things about myself that I will
just
laugh at.
A person is only as big as what gets them mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's always interesting. I think once you sort of grok that concept, watching people react to strangers in real life or on the internet is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And then once I figure, like if I know somebody's coming at me and they're trying to make me mad, like pausing and switching like to the other foot just to really unbalance it works really well.
Yeah. Yeah. But the key is recognizing it.
Yeah. Like you have to put that sort of trigger in your brain for that. So it trips the, you know, circuit breaker to your short fuse.
Yeah, exactly.
How's that for a metaphor?
Sweet metaphor. The electricians will be calling us about that one, but okay.
Yeah. I hope not. I don't know very much about electrical stuff.
It's a weakness. Is that what you're saying? We can laugh at it though.
Well, Dad did all the wiring in our house, so.
Oh my.
Well,
I don't think I could sleep in a house if I knew the person who wired it.
My dad is actually pretty handy. It's just more like, just because the switch is up doesn't mean that the light is on, that sort of thing.
Right. All right. So where do you think you've learned the most about having good, we've gone into conversations. Mm-hmm. Let's go with this. Having good conversations with other adults.
Probably mostly from my husband.
Mm, yeah.
And people that I meet and then I'm like, okay, wow, you guys, you're really adult. You're really nice. You're using your manners to help me feel relaxed instead of defensive, you know, like the whole People who are very comfortable with themselves, I find attractive. And then it makes me want to relax and to be like that, you know, to not be on the defensive, you know, to be open to stuff and not to be like constantly jockeying for an angle or something like right. that. Yeah. So I find that fairly attractive. And like my husband, like Paul, he's very sure of himself and who he is and like not so much what he wants, but like what he knows what he can do.
Okay, he'll be our next guest. Because how the hell do you do that? How do you become that?
You come through conflict, I think.
Oh.
I think you come through conflict and then you find out your limits, I guess.
I'm such a shitty adult.
Yes.
Not enough conflict in my life? Wait.
I know. I didn't have enough challenges or stuff growing up. But
yeah, that can be true for sure for a lot of us.
But, you know, having an adversarial childhood, too, it affects the rest of your life. Like, it affects your health, all of your outcomes, you know. So, I mean, there are some benefits, but it's not something that you want to, like, inflict yourself personally. Right. And it doesn't always, it affects people differently, too, you know. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or it could be an innate thing. Like, you know, he's just.
More happy chemicals in his brain than
he's fairly like introspective. Like he spends a lot of time thinking
yeah.
about himself, but he doesn't have that anxiety thing that like I do, or like, you know, a lot of the other people we interact with do.
Hi girls.
Sorry.
That's not a judgment,
but he's also, yeah, because you're ambitious, right? The anxiety is the flip yeah. side of being ambitious, like being, and like, not to say that he isn't ambitious, but it's like what he wants is very simple. Like he knows that, you know, having a lot of money or material success only makes you so happy, you know, like it's the intangible stuff, having, good friends, having good family, that's what matters. And also knowing that you don't need very much to live with, I think too, because then you're not as afraid of losing things, yeah. right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, as we sit in my very well appointed office, I feel like, having everything I need all the time has made me soft.
Well, yes. And that's like another thing Paul's very good at. This is turning into like the Paul podcast. Is like he's almost like ascetic in some things. Like he will not, like, he'll treat himself, but only like in little bits. And like he won't, you know, go out and do, like, what he likes to do, his treat for the week is like he goes down to the night oven and gets baking and bread and stuff. And
hi, that's Bryn. His
yeah.
Sponsored by. I think we sponsor the night oh. oven.
Oh, the chocolate Saskatoon. Croissants. Oh my God. So, yeah. you know, like just very much, he doesn't ask for very much and he doesn't like indulge himself very often.
Does he indulge himself? Is it a reward for good things happening or a reward for bad things happening? When does he... And then we'll talk about when we do this.
Yeah, like if he's having a bad day or something, like he won't come home and have a beer because he doesn't drink. And he won't come home and have a root beer because that's his favorite. He saves that for when he wants to relax.
You know, that's smart.
Yeah, like he doesn't use the like food and stuff like that as like a bad day thing. It's more like... He eats well and then like he gets some exercise and stuff and then he plays video games or watches movies or stuff like that. Or he works on the bikes. Like he keeps himself busy rather than sitting and eating, I guess. Whereas I'm yeah. quite the opposite.
Yeah. I know I tend to, if I've had especially a busy day at work, not necessarily a hard mm-hmm. day, but like where I haven't had time to step away,
mm-hmm.
my instinct is to do as little work as possible to like make supper. So that'll be, you know, mm-hmm. Boston pizza or McDonald's night.
Yeah. Like he doesn't let if he's tired or something, he doesn't let that get in the way of what needs to get done.
Right.
You know,
that's the definition of being tired. That's when I start letting things get in the way of getting things done.
Yes. Where, yeah. Like if I'm stressed or whatever, like if I run out of energy, I need to like stop and like fall on the floor. Like I can't.
Right. And you tell yourself.
Yeah.
You tell yourself you've earned it.
Yes.
Which.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know when you've earned it. Right. And like pushing yourself and that sort of thing, like pushing past stuff, that's a learned skill. And it's something that you strengthen by repeated doing. Of course, you can go too far in the opposite direction and like push yourself too much, and then you end up with like injury, like, you know, whether psychic or physical, that sort of thing too. So that's a danger as well.
Yeah.
Like knowing the balance. He's got most of the stuff figured out. Men.
I think something I've learned from my husband, just to sort of go back to a different, something we were talking about earlier, was dealing with teasing. Like I grew up and I was teased a lot in school too. And I was very sensitive to it. Like I didn't like having my vulnerabilities pointed out in public.
Oh yes. And I'm sure everybody picked on you because you were...
I was very small and I was very smart relative to the rest of them, at least book smart, school smart. So yeah, I was, and I was also often the new kid in town. So yeah, the trifecta of, I think everybody thinks they got bullied in school.
Yeah. I see the people I went to school with and now they're all adults. We kind of get along. And like, the thing is too, I feel bad because the stuff I learned in high school, I went on and used it against people in university. And, you know,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm ever gonna, like, I don't think I should be forgiven for some of that stuff. Because it was like, well, not really bad, I suppose, in the large scheme of things. But for me, it was bad.
Right.
You know, so because
Now I'm gonna have to go back and think about that stuff. Yeah,
I figure there's a statute of limitations on some of that stuff. I mean, it's almost 10 years out of university.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah. But
I do, whenever I run into someone who knew me from university and they're like, oh, Hillary, like, so good to see you. And I was like, oh, really? I thought I was kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. I know. I've apologized to a couple people on Facebook and stuff. And yeah, I've stopped doing it because I feel like I make it about me again.
Yeah, I had one girl like sort of obliquely apologize to me like about 5 or 6 years after high school. And I was, at the time, I was sort of like, okay, like, thanks. But like, I can tell we're both sort of different people now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't know. I guess I'm trying to say is, if I was mean to you and you need an apology, let me know and I will come and apologize to you sincerely.
Ditto. I was mean to a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people were mean to me. I don't really care that they were mean to me. So I guess I go forward with the assumption that that they also sort of get that I was a damaged person being mean to them too. I hope that. Anyway. What I was saying was Mark is he teases people. He does it in that way that, you know, when the kid in school teased you and your parents told you or your teacher told you that it was because he liked you, like he does it that way, which I don't approve of.
Oh my God, there were so many boys that must have liked me.
Exactly. No, I don't believe that's true. But that is Mark's like style of teasing is to like find something. I guess it's negging, right? It's finding that thing he can tell you feel insecure about.
And then
needling you on it. And I am not going to say that's how I know he loves me because I don't believe it. But it is. So I separate that from my relationship with him and like use it as a way to go, oh, like I'm not laughing along with the joke. Part of it's because it's not actually funny maybe, but also because I am feeling insecure with it. How do I deal with that rather than just hating my husband? So I feel like that's something I've gained from him. That's, wow, that sounds really negative. Cut.
How to handle being nagged.
But I mean, life nags you all the time. And so, yeah.
I guess maybe why you're upset about it is the implication that you should change it.
That's the thing is, and it goes back to like the soccer girl that I was talking about at the beginning. It's like, okay, so if you two are similar, do you want to change that?
Yeah.
Like, or are you happy with that? Realizing the effect now, realizing the effect it might have on people, or realizing that it's something that you can't laugh but yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, cause I thought, oh, I'm decisive and straightforward. And then you think you're decisive and straightforward and everybody looks at you and thinks, oh, you're bossy and insecure.
Right.
So yeah. How you think you are and how you're coming off. Or in the defensiveness when you realize that how you're coming off is not how you think you are.
And there's such a difference between decisive and actually having thought things through and come to a good decision. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's these attributes that we say are good, like decisiveness, that, yeah, they're okay. But unless you have moral fabric behind it, they're kind of empty. And yeah, if you've got the character to back up being...
Well, because you have to follow through on it, right? Because if you make a decision and then it doesn't turn out, and then you're not carrying through on it, or you're not accepting responsibility, right?
Yeah.
What's the point? You might as well just not decide.
Right. And there goes the value of your so-called strength.
Because, yeah, I remember, like, when I've made a decisive pronouncement that we're going to do this, whatever, and it, like totally blew up in my face. Like, even just, like, small stuff, like holiday trips or whatever. And then how you deal with that is part of being decisive.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Otherwise, you're just bossy.
Fine. If my idea is not going to work, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a really great attitude to have when you're trying to relax on vacation.
Well, right. And it's also bad at work.
Oh, yeah. Work.
Yeah. We don't have to talk about work.
Oh, well.
But yeah, I mean, it makes you look bad at work too, even though you were doing what you thought you were supposed to do, which was be decisive and a leader. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're not willing to take the shit that comes with it, then yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah. Makes you look bad. It makes you look worse than if you'd just not been decisive in the beginning.
Well, yeah, because that's part of leadership is actually like admitting when you're wrong and rolling with that and rolling other people into your decision-making process.
Right.
You know, that's how you come out of that. That's how you come through that, you know, successfully if you've made a wrong decision.
I've heard.
Yeah. You should see our group chats when I've decided I'm like, I'm going to be inclusive. It's like, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
Although a good like shortcut out of that is like, if you veto something, you have to suggest something else.
Right.
That's the rule.
Yes. Don't bring forward a problem unless you have a proposed solution.
But then I piss people off trying to enforce that. Like, well, you said no, so now you have to suggest something else. Like, well, I don't want to suggest something else. Well, now you have to. Like, well, fine. We're just not going to do anything this weekend.
Exactly. Yay, us. We are decisive.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What else are we talking about here?
Self-care. Were we talking about that?
Yeah.
You've done.
So I did an episode about self-care and gave a whole bunch of like things to do. Mm-hmm. And they did. I mean, I said that I do a wide range of things, including like falling on the couch and vegging with alcohol and television. I think I also did mention that like going for a run is good too. I've heard. but to get back to the philosophy of Paul.
Mm-hmm. Well, like one thing we were talking about too is we were talking about how you take care of yourself. And he said to me, like, how do you realize, like, you know, when to push yourself just to do something just a little bit harder than the least responsible thing you want to do? Like, he says that's part of being an adult, you know, like knowing that you need to instead of like lying on the couch and drinking alcohol. You need to sit at your desk with a smaller glass of alcohol and apply for jobs. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Like he's saying that the, you know, when you know you need that little extra push, that you just need to do a little bit more in order to get out and eliminate the source rather than deal with the symptoms.
Right. It's sort of like a stitch in time saves nine, where if you would just stop with the self-care for a second, mm-hmm. what you think is helping you, the like downtime and relaxing with your friends on Slack and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. If you put just a little bit of that effort and time into something you're dreading or something you don't think you can do or
yeah,
something where you don't know what the next step is.
And I think it's easier to do with like other people than with yourself.
Totally.
But like not to tell other people what to do with their spare time. Is this more like, or just a check internally to see, because usually like inside you, you will know, like if you've got like a decent judgment base, you will know when you're not doing the right thing.
Or, yeah.
Or not the right thing, but a righter thing.
Right.
You know, like I know that exercise will help when I'm feeling like my brain is eating itself, you know.
Yeah.
But do I do it always? No.
Right.
But if I did it more, would that then become somebody that I admire?
I think that's how it works.
So much work though.
I know.
But the more you do it, like the more muscle you build up, the right. more you're able to do it.
The habit and yeah. you can get the payoff and yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody has different self-care things and what works for you or what looks or what would be actually like suboptimal or, you know, counterproductive for one is not necessarily for yourself.
True.
Yeah.
That's very true.
So it's a very thin line between like helping people and telling them what they're supposed to be doing.
It's true. And I know
never being bossy.
You and I are in a shared Slack channel with a bunch of fabulous people, and we're not going to talk about specifics of what goes on in that Slack channel because what happens on Slack stays on Slack. But
also it's really hard to put GIFs on,
yeah,
on podcast.
Eggplant, star, rainbow heart. Woo! I think it's a good place for airing your whininess
mm-hmm.
and then seeing what people say
mm-hmm.
and either ignoring it or considering it or doing it.
You know, we should invent like a shorthand. So, or like a symbol. So either people know when you're venting because you want help or you're venting because you just want to vent, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, like code.
Because there's nothing that's more angry making when you're just like, you just want to like, rah, 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 and somebody comes in and like tries to fix the problem. And you're like, no.
Yeah.
Shut up. I tried that already. Or you're that's like, I need help. Suggested. And everyone's sort of like, well,
you do you, honey.
Have some wine.
Yeah, have some wine. Good advice. I'm already drunk.
I have an alcohol problem now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's that's an interesting. I mean, that is the problem with humanity, right? Is always not hearing what the other person is asking for.
Well, and I think that we know each other fairly well enough now to like if somebody is offering you help and you're not in the mood for it, you're not going to like snap at them.
Right.
Yeah.
Or stop talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Or be like, or go into like, and start DMing other people. I can't believe she just said that to me.
Right. Yeah. And I think that is a difference between adult, you know, group chat
yeah.
and teenage socializing is that, yeah, I think we get that we've all lived through all of these different things.
Oh, I remember.
And we want to help each other because we're good people.
Like you'd send the wrong text message to someone or someone would read your text message the wrong way because you didn't put in like 50 exclamation marks. And then one other girl would say something to you about them. And then you wouldn't like talk to each other for like 3 months. It was so stupid.
It is so stupid. Oh man. That just reminded me of somebody who I owe an apology to from grade 12 in 1989. Good times.
Email was just coming in when we were in high school. And then I discovered that you don't have to give your real, like the teachers stuff, like don't give your real name on the internet, right? And then I realized I could set up all of these anonymous email accounts and then like email mean stuff to like guys that I liked.
Oh, you're a horrible human being.
I know. And there's like 11 people on my grade, so I'm sure they know who they are now. I don't even know why I did it. I don't even know. I can't even tell you.
Right.
I can't tell you why I did that.
That is the great mystery.
Here's a boy I like. I'm going to send him rude sentences.
Right.
I guess that's teasing. That's the teasing.
I guess. Super weird.
Oh, I'm so glad I don't teach high school.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could.
I think teaching all grades is like, wow. No thanks.
No.
I'm glad someone does it.
I
think they're taking one for the team, though.
I thought about going into education after I finished my art degree, and my mom was like, seriously? I'm like, thanks, Mom. My mom's a junior high teacher, and she was right. I would be a terrible teacher.
I want to have an episode with a teacher about parent-teacher interviews, because they are from hell. Even the good parent-teacher interviews are, like, super awkward.
My parents always sided with the teacher, you know, whenever we were like, they never like the adults stuck together. We never saw that division.
Right.
So we can exploit that.
Right.
So, but now I think things are a little different.
Yeah. I think parents are more inclined to stick up for their kids than to stand by the teacher. If there's like a student teacher conflict happening.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there was like lots of times where it wasn't justified.
Right.
But, you know, but it's still.
It sets. Oh, man. Boomers, they knew how to like make a system work, right?
Yeah. Wow. Everybody had their place.
United fronts and roles. Very strict roles that you followed.
Yeah. And like, that's not to say just because we were raised that way that it's better. Like, no, because like there were lots of teachers who were getting away with stuff that, you know, they shouldn't have.
But you have to admit, it was very functional.
Yes. The system chugged along very efficiently. There was only a lot of conflict on the smallest people.
Exactly.
But yeah. Teachers.
Teachers.
Children.
Oh, man. Speaking of seeing something in yourself or seeing something in somebody else and realizing that it's a personality flaw in you, children.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. They're like little tiny mirrors.
I'm turning into yourself. I'm turning into my mother, sort of.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Or my dad. Or both. I don't know.
nice little, you know, 60-40, 50-50 split, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Well, and like I have four siblings, so we have a fairly large sample size to see how our parents influenced us.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of interesting. So it's like, oh, these characters just manifest themselves in like three of my five siblings.
It's like the whole blue eye, brown eye gene thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Except for we all look the same.
Yeah. My sister and I just have to debate. Which, like, it's binary. It's like, are you more like dad or more like mom? Yeah. We used to fight about, like, we had this ownership thing with our parents. Like, whose kid were you?
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think when we were really little, like 7, 8, we would debate.
Who you liked more.
Yeah. Who's your favorite parent?
Mm.
And who you thought their favorite kid was.
We didn't really worry too much about that. I mean, it was fairly obvious after a while that mom favored my oldest brother.
There it is. I invite all of you siblings to my next podcast, which will be held in a wrestling ring.
Okay, you know what it'd be? It would be like five people constantly burning each other for an hour. And then if you invite my mom, it's like six people burning each other for
an
hour.
Gold.
Yeah. We bug each other so much all the time. To the point where like some people can't believe like I speak that way to my mom.
Right.
And I'm like, well, she makes fun of me.
Yep.
So.
Oh, that reminds me. One of the last family reunions I was at, it would be several years ago. I was bantering back and forth with my Uncle Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and I wanted to be cruel. So I said, Uncle Murray, you look more and more like my dad every day, which means your bald spot's getting bigger, son. Mm-hmm. And he said, and you look more and more like your mom every day. And I'm like, ah, that hurts. That was the worst.
Oh, I've had people my whole life.
I totally look like mom. Like, yeah. Of course I do.
I have everybody my whole life. Oh, you must be Susan's daughter. I'm like, really? I look like my dad. But we all talk like my mom. I don't think it's such a bad thing to be my mom, though.
No. And I don't think it's such a bad thing that Paulina is basically me. I think it's kind of awesome, actually.
Now you can have the life I've always wanted.
Exactly.
Go! Be free! Yeah. I remember mom did that with us sometimes. Like, she would make decisions that we didn't agree with. Like, she wouldn't let us do... I remember I wanted to go on a... Did I say this in the last one? I wanted to go on a co-ed camping trip when I was 15 with some older friends from university. My mom said no. And of course, as a 15-year-old, I was enraged that I couldn't go camp in tents with 19-year-old boys and alcohol.
Huh.
You know.
Wow, what a terrible mom she was.
Yeah. But then she was like, when I was your age, I wanted to do that with these other guys. And grandma said no. And like, I was really upset and I know how you're feeling, blah, blah, blah. But this is why I'm doing it. And I mean, like, you can deconstruct that like a whole lot of ways. But in retrospect, she was probably right.
You think?
So instead, I just went to Regina and hung out at university.
Right.
And drank with 19-year-old boys when I was 16. Yeah. But at least we weren't in tents. Nothing bad happened. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, exactly. Way to go, Mom. Good call. I'm changing up my standard questions. You know, I used to ask, what's your favorite thing about being a grown-up and what's your least favorite thing about being a grown-up?
Mm-hmm.
But my main problem is I haven't figured out what I want my standard question to be. So, okay, here's one. I should have prepped
you
for this.
You should just do like fuck, marry, kill or something.
Yeah. Here is what I'm going to ask. And you can think about this for a little while.
Okay.
What's a question you want me to ask on the next episode? What would you like to hear some random person? Because I don't even know who it is yet. What would you like to hear them answer? And it's like truth, dare, double dare, or promise or repeat.
Hmm.
Like something very... are required by law, mm-hmm. federal law, to answer honestly.
I've been thinking a lot lately, and I don't know if it's something that is common, because right now I'm going back and playing through a video game that's 18 years old. It's Final Fantasy VII, by the way. And I'm sure there's a lot of you out there who play that. And I find it really easy to go back into being a teenager, being a very imaginative, very like obsessed with like one thing. Like, I'm playing this game, I'm reading the books around it, I'm reading like fan fiction, I'm looking at like websites and stuff like mm-hmm. that, and it's throwing me back into like being 13 14 15. And like every so often I do this with myself, mm-hmm. to see if I still have that focus, that like that really intense imagination type thing. And I don't know if that's something you lose as you get older, or if everybody has it and they don't talk about it.
Right.
Or if it's, you know, something that everybody has.
Hmm.
But that's not a very good question.
No, but it could be a good talking point.
It is a good talking
point. Yeah.
Something, because I think like a lot of people have that, especially people who like read a lot or who like to immerse themselves in a thing.
Yeah.
And I, at one the same time, I really like it. But also feel like it's dangerous because it takes all of my focus away from everything else.
Right.
Like, I don't work on anything else while I'm doing this. So I almost overexpose myself. But I also sort of understand like the people who are like really obsessed with like fandom or like a video game or a series of books, that sort of thing. So I can empathize with that. I guess maybe it was like, is it a sign of maturity getting rid of that, or immaturity?
Right. Like,
yeah. Or yeah. Is it just a sign of imagination?
Is that right?
Yeah. Or is it
do
an
you want
obsessive?
To keep that as part of your adulthood experience?
Yeah. Is it a good thing or a bad thing being able to focus?
A lot of grown-ups let go of that.
I know, you have to read horribly boring books so that you don't get like too distracted from going to work and actually.
Killing me.
Yeah. I guess is it escape or is it, you know,
exercise?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like when I was younger, I read so much and I read like fairy tales, fantasy, like everything fiction. I read so much that my dad would come in, like I would read all summer as much as I could. And my dad is like, you have to go outside and do some stuff because you cannot stay inside and read for like 3, 4, 5 hours, 6 hours a day, especially on a farm.
Right.
You know, like he's like, you're reading too much. So yeah, maybe it is me.
I don't know.
I'm way too intense.
My daughter is like that too. She reads, but she also plays video games like hours and hours and hours on end during the summer.
Yeah. And like Paul and I are playing through the same video game, like, but he can play it for a bit and set it down. And I can't.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
And that might have an association with that. Like, I have a hard time setting stuff down.
But that can be a good thing, too. Like, in some ways, I envy people like that for their ability to pick one thing and stick with it. Like, I have too many things on the go and I never get good enough at something, or my knowledge never gets deep enough to feel like an expert in it.
Oh yeah. I mean, like one of the first things I did when I moved out to university is because we didn't have video games a lot growing up. I bought myself a Game Boy with her because we didn't have regular allowance or anything like that. And then like we only had half hour TV. And so when I bought this Game Boy, it was like, oh, and then my mom would take it and she would regulate it. Like she would hide it so that we weren't playing it all the time. Yeah. So then when I got to university, I'm like, I have my own income, my student loans. So I'm going to buy my own Game Boy and games. And then like I logged 200 hours on Final Fantasy Tactics. Right. You know what I mean? Not doing work or something like that. And then I took it home like for a break. My mom took it and hid it. And as like a 19-year-old, I was like, okay, mom, like I'm an adult now with all of your 19-year-old authority you can muster. But I see what she was doing now, but it's taken me a while to be able to be a mom to myself and like take it away.
See, I was pre-internet, my youth.
Mm-hmm.
So, and TV was regulated at home.
Yeah.
And when I got to university and there was TV around, I just watched it.
Like, oh, yeah.
I didn't have within myself that ability to turn it off. Because my mom and dad had already always enforced it. And I was like, free TV time. Like, just get all of it now. And I don't know how much of my, you know, early 20s I wasted because I was trying to fill up on TV.
Yeah. Like all of a sudden I had to catch up on all these music videos. And we had to watch Trading Spaces. Oh my God. So much Trading Spaces. And that has done like nothing for me except for I remember that you should never ever ever staple fake flowers on the wall of a bathroom because it's not going to end well.
No, that did not end well.
And also making furniture out of like foam chunks.
Yeah. There were some bad ideas on that show.
Yes. Anyway,
but we watched it for hours too. Oh
yeah. Gosh. And it wasn't even like, you know, curling and stuff like that. I can kind of exempt, but
it might end differently in sports.
Yeah,
but those shows are so formulated.
It's just like time filler. But yeah, we don't have cable. I can't, like, if we go out to a bar and there's a TV on, I'm going to be watching the commercials instead of like talking with people because I'm like, ooh, shiny, you know? And I'm like, and because it's now since then I've read a lot of like sociology and stuff like that. So I'm actually like analyzing the commercials, but to anybody else, it looks like I'm just sitting there going, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess, at what point does, you know, taking stuff away from your kids, does that like helps them in the short term, but does it help them in the long term? If they can't help themselves.
I used to think I was doing a bang up job with that because Paulina would like play a video game for a while and then set it down and walk away and go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
But lately she's not been doing that so much. So it's like, oh, maybe that is wearing off. I don't know. I think it's pretty age appropriate and whatever. School's almost started. School.
I guess a question of that would be, at one point did you realize that if you don't make yourself do it, nobody will. Like, if you can't control yourself, nobody can.
Right.
Like, that's the point of maturity, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some people are always good at, like, regulating themselves.
Yeah.
What's that like? That must be nice.
Yeah, it must be nice.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. You can find us on the internet at goodstuff.fm/grownups, or again on iTunes. You can search for I Guess We're Grownups Now and subscribe. I'm on Twitter also at grownups_fm. Thanks for listening.